All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. Monday, October 15th. I'm Doug Norrie. I'm with
Chris Durrell.
That was your cue to say your name, buddy. Okay, well, we're not going to do a double take.
I got it.
A little bit of a... You got it. You said your name. All right. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/deals is going to get you, the podcast listener, that special deal where we take $5 off the monthly package. So it's usually $29.95 for podcast listeners. It's $24.95. DFSR.com/deals. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. NBA starts tomorrow. I'm very excited about that. Hockey-based projections, optimizer coming very soon on that. Premium chat or premium content, premium chat. It's all covered under one subscription. Under one subscription package, dfsr.com/deals. The dog in the background likes it too, so everyone's very excited. Go check that out over on the website. Also, just a note: we are going with NBA starting tomorrow. We will start recording our NBA podcasts that go up 3 or 4 times a week. I'll put the first couple on this NFL feed. So if you're updating your iTunes or whatever you listen podcasts through and you see NBA podcast, it's just because we're trying to move people over to that one as well because it's on a different feed. So I'll put a special edition on there. But you will see on the NFL feed, you will see NBA podcast. Hope you go and take a listen if you're playing NBA. DFS starts in earnest tomorrow. Very exciting. All right, buddy. Week 6 almost in the books here. We got a Monday night game still to go tonight with the Packers playing. But, man, it was a crazy week. I mean, I have a couple things I wanted to talk about. Just in general, did you find this to be, I hate to say this because NFL is always like this, but like one of the wilder weeks just in terms of certain teams sort of defying expectations, certain teams playing better than maybe you thought, defenses playing worse. What was your overall feeling about the way week 6 kind of shook out?
Yeah, I mostly got to watch like all the morning games, which is usually the most part of the slate anyway. And it was pretty crazy with, you know, bad teams doing good, good defenses doing bad. I missed some of the afternoon stuff, was out of the house for a bit. But overall, it seemed like a very high variance week. There is a couple things that we'll get into, of course, that were definitely rock solid. But the defense thing really stood out to me for sure.
I should have known the day was going to go off the rails when, because I'm out of the country, I'm in Mexico right now for a week or two, and I was just desperately trying to find a place that would show the games, like just, you know, I was like typing in sports bars or whatever. I even stopped at a place the day before and tried to get someone to, you know, do you show, you know, Football Americana, and I was insured, yes. So I found this like Mexican Irish pub. It had about, I'm going to say 20 TVs, I could see 12 of them. At one point, I counted every single game was the Cardinals and Vikings. So it like just didn't matter which way you turned. That was just the only game they were willing to show. And I couldn't figure out a way to convey to the people there that I asking them if there would be another way to show another game. So that I was forced into just watching, no matter which way my head turned, the Cardinals and Vikings with one other couple there that was a set of Vikings fans. So I was in an Irish pub. It was in Mexico watching American football. They had an Oktoberfest deal, so they were serving German beer. I ordered American food and only got the one watch game. And so I felt like I was kind of checking all the boxes when that was happening. And I had no Wi-Fi and couldn't get any of the scores. So I was just kind of sitting there in a hole. So I should have known the week was going to go off the rails just really, really from the start. Okay, you mentioned the defensive thing. There was a debate on Twitter going around from people that I consider to be pretty smart in terms of just statistics and analytics. And one of the things that had been thrown out there in the last couple weeks is that I'm going to sort of summarize by saying defense doesn't matter when projecting fantasy points. And I think I texted you or G-chatted you at some point yesterday, man. Do you think, yesterday kind of, if you subscribe to that feeling, yesterday seemed to prove the point. What these top, I would say three of the top five defense in the league just got completely run over. What do we make of that? Is it too small of a sample size to take into account? But it was funny that it fell on the heels of a pretty intense Twitter debate about how we use defenses to sort of project fantasy points.
The one thing for sure is that the argument is not going to stop after last week. Definitely seeing those three defenses in Jacksonville, Cleveland, and Chicago kind of get blown up there is shocking for one, like especially the Bears. They just couldn't tackle. I don't know what their mindset was, but they just, that one Albert Wilson play, I wouldn't say he broke the tackles. I would say more like Chicago missed the tackles and let him go for that long touchdown. Like it was just unbelievable. They just weren't there at all. And overall, it kind of brings me to a point where I'm looking at the winning lineup for one of the FanDuel contests I'm in, and it had Baltimore Ravens at 6% ownership, where the Chicago Bears were like 29% owned. So making pivots, a great place to make pivots in tournaments can be your defenses. Like even Buffalo lost the game. they still had 7 sacks, and they were like, I think, like the 6th highest scoring defense on the week. So that's definitely something we can look at going forward.
Well, here's the thing. You know, defenses in general are going to be are a variant sort of asset to have in fantasy. Like, if you look at the standard deviation of defenses, actually, Chicago had been one of the most consistent up until this point on a weekly basis. But because fantasy defense, so these are two separate points. One is looking at just fantasy defense in general and how they score. So, you know, Chicago didn't, I think they scored 5 FanDuel points. There's so few ways you can score for defenses that is going to be variable. But the weird thing is just like guys like Brock Osweiler, I mean, just tore them apart. Do you think is there anything to be said for Chicago learns that Tannehill is not going to play? They know Brock Osweiler stinks. Everyone else knows he stinks. The line went crazy after. I think the line went up like Bears, like 4.5 to 5 points when the Tannehill news came out up on the Bears side. Do you think there's anything that Bears kind of saw that thought they had the game won easily, and then Osweiler comes out and just at least shows that he's like, for a game, could be a competent quarterback?
Yeah, especially, you know, going on the road into Miami, a little bit different atmosphere for Chicago. That's pretty big travel. I mean, travel can't be that big these days, but that's definitely got to play in their minds for sure. Sitting in the locker room pregame thinking about, oh, well, we're playing Brock Osweiler. This is awesome. Let's just go out there and pound him into the ground and hold him to 0 points and get 6 picks and, you know, run away with the show and get back to Chicago.
Cleveland gets completely run by the Chargers. Jacksonville gets destroyed by Dak, and Dak finally throws to wide receivers. Got Cole Beasley caught a couple of touchdowns. So the defensive thing, it's just funny coming on the heels of this debate how we see that defenses, the three of the best defenses sort of do get torn up from a fantasy perspective from guys who, I mean, honestly, Brock, Dak, these guys are just not very good. And to have them sort of kind of pick them apart, I found to be interesting. What individual performances stood out to you this week? There were some really big ones. We can talk about, we can kind of go through position by position as well. But I don't know, one or two performances from this week that solidified something in your head that we already thought? Was there stuff that maybe started changing your mind? We'll go through a bunch of these, but I don't know what kind of stands out to you as maybe the top of the mountain in terms of performance.
Yeah, I've got like 4 really good ones that really stood out in my mind. You kind of touched on one there with Dak Prescott finally throwing to a wide receiver. Cole Beasley is the first Cowboys wide receiver to break 100 yards and get multiple touchdowns since, I think it was, week 8 in 2015, which was also Cole Beasley. So pretty crazy there that he finally started throwing to wide receivers. To me, one of the biggest ones that stood out to me right away was everyone was all like, Todd Gurley's price, that's crazy, $10,000 on DK and $9,500 on FanDuel. Do we start debating whether we want to fade him? Well, he kind of put that debate to bed because he crushed value again. And even if he was 10 grand every week, he's hit cash value, which I look at cash value as like 3 times on DraftKings and 2 times on FanDuel. He's hit that every single week, even if his price was where it was last week. So I think, you know, him in general, I think his price could be 10-5. 10-5 to 11, and, you know, at that 11,000 point on DraftKings, maybe 10-5 on FanDuel, or even 11,000 on FanDuel, that's where maybe we should start debating whether you want to fade him in any given week. Just his usage is up there. He's running the ball like no one else. He leads everyone, quarterbacks included, in fantasy points this season. So I just, you know, I'm kind of getting that, let's think about fading Todd Gurley totally out of my head and finding a way to get him in every week, especially with, you know, you can pay down at tight end and there's so many value wide receivers out there.
Yeah, I was sort of a mixed bag for me because I thought the FanDuel price was easy enough to kind of fit. FanDuel's pricing is soft across the board. And so just the fact that he was under 10,000 there, he ended up being something like a 75 to 80% cash game start. So people saw it there. The 10,000 on DraftKings was a lot harder to stomach just because there were fewer ways to save. It meant you were going to have to completely punt at least 2 positions. I mean, you're pretty much always punting tight end to begin with. It pretty much meant you had to start 2 tight ends to start even thinking about getting his price in there. And you're right, like the guy, it's just an insane amount of usage they get. Like, I don't even, like, something 30 touches. Now, the game script worked out in his favor. It was cold. There had been snow on the ground. So there were a lot of things that did kind of help him along there. But he doesn't really need help at this point because, I mean, just the amount of touches that they're willing to give him on a week-to-week basis, really nobody else is all that close. We have a couple guys that, you know, Kamara was going to kind of get touch up against it if he had kept playing and had been the only guy. But that's not the case anymore. Zeke is really the only guy close. So right now, if you look at Gurley, he's 26.5 carries plus targets per game. The next closest guy is Zeke at 24.5. Then you go all the way down to James Conner. That's gonna go away, you know, with Bell after the bye, and then Bell comes back. And then you get down to Kamara, I already talked about him, and then you get down to Mixon and Barkley. It's four total touches less, you know, 15 to 20% less touches per game. There's just no one else even close to him. So I think you're right. The debate at this point is just how much you think you can pay for him. 10-5 in DraftKings, you're gonna have to save somewhere else, and still it just feels crazy that we're even talking about guys in this. He's up to 10. He is up, by the way, he's up to 10-2 for the main slate. Yep. Next week early.
Came down 200 still, on DraftKings.
And it's against San Francisco. I think we'll still be able to go there. The pricing is soft. I haven't completely run lineups yet, but his usage is not going to get lowered in our system. No. San Francisco is a good, fast matchup. So other performances, that you said you had a bunch. You mentioned Gurley. You mentioned Dak. Who else did you have on your list as performances that stood out to you?
Going into last night's game, something that, you know, really solidified for me, I've been kind of talking about it for a couple weeks now, is Sony Michel has become kind of like a, you know, their workhorse back, even though James White is in there. And what I really like in some of my season long leagues, I have both of them and I've ran them every week. They're really sustaining two viable fantasy options in there. Since Michel became the starting running back in week 3, he's had 98 or more rushing yards in every game, 25, 18, and 24 carries, and he's got 4 touchdowns, one in every game. He's only got 2 targets, but I mean, that's where James White comes in. And in those 3 weeks since Michelle has taken over as the lead back, White's had 7, 14, and 10 targets for, I think it's 192 yards and 2 receiving touchdowns. So they're sustaining 2 running backs, and it's kind of crazy thinking that, you know, from the Patriots, but they really want to get Michelle involved. Like I said, they spent a first round draft pick, and they don't do that whatsoever in a Bill Belichick era. I think only once before they've done that. So they proved that they're going to get him involved, and he looks like he's a good back. And then if White ever goes down, I think Michelle is going to be, you know, I think his price is going to jump even higher than it is. He's up to 7,300 on FanDuel this week. They're both at 7,300 because Michelle was a good pass catching back in college as well.
Yeah, no, that, you know, when you're running back for the Patriots and you're going to get 15 to 19 carries per game, they're just going to be high success touches, right? Like, that's just the nature of the Patriots offense. They have a lot of ways to beat you. And if you're a running back, like, for instance, his 19 carries per game are going to look very different than, I'm trying to think of another example, like Peyton Barber's 19 carries a game or something like that. I know he's only at 13. Or, you know, no, I'll use a better one. Alex Collins had 19 carries this week. Like, if you're going to look at that number, like, you just can't create those the same, because just the nature of the Patriots offense is just going to have you down and close more than the Baltimore offense. And Baltimore, by the way, has been a decent offense this year, but you're just going to, your carries are just going to be born out of something different. So even though the pass catching hasn't totally been there, I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see it a little more as the season goes on, as he becomes more comfortable in the offense. It can't get any lower, right? Like, he's just, at this point, he's just really not catching any balls at all. He only had 1 target last night. No, but I'm totally with you. New England is just, they are starting to click on offense. They have so many weapons to it, wide receiver. I think that only helps him in terms of them getting up better in games and be able to run downhill a little bit more.
And defenses can't stack the box.
Exactly. What are you going to do? You have 4 legit, you know, just real problematic wide receivers if they're all on the field together between Edelman, Hogan, Gordon, and Gronk. And so at that point, you're really behind the 8 ball as a defense in terms of like what you're going to want to try to stop, because you have to make a choice. And if the choice is going to be, you know, single covering or even trying to double cover any one of those guys, that's just going to leave a lot of room for running. One more thing about running backs too. The landscape of running back is getting even more uncertain. I mean, we talked about a couple of these guys whose opportunity seems to be there, but this list is so short now in terms of who we can actually trust, because now we see 2 other teams. So Jordan Howard is basically outsnapped by Tarik Cohen last week. Yeah. That had been going the wrong way. Ito Smith outsnaps Tevin Coleman. So forget this team. Tevin Coleman was looking like something of a punt play with Freeman out again, or at least a stopgap guy, and gets outsnapped by Ito Smith. Do you see these running backs? Do you see like this, the tier at the top shrinking even more as we get into the season? It usually doesn't feel like this because injuries will give you a wider berth on who the running backs can be, but it feels like we're really going in the opposite direction this season.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, Ito Smith, like that's the third running back on the team that normally, like you said, Tevin Coleman with the starting running back out, Freeman, would be like, boom, you need to get him in there. He's like, he's in there for 15 to 20 fantasy points. But Ito Smith's cutting into that. We had Alvin Kamara, who was elite, probably the, you know, one of the top fantasy running backs with Todd Gurley at the start of the season. Mark Ingram comes in. He out-touches him in their last game there before the bye. So, you know, we've kind of got to look at the prices a lot closer when it comes to Ingram versus Kamara now. It definitely, that top gap is just shrinking big time. It's, you know, it's making decisions a lot harder at the running back position. A lot, what's something I've noticed the last 2 or 3 weeks, all of the winning lineups, like for tournaments, are like almost cheap quarterbacks, low owned cheap quarterbacks, and just loading up at the running back position.
It makes sense. You can't really get a ton of upside. Here's the thing, people want to try to shoot upside on some of these other running backs. And it's just not, you need a miracle. And I get you need miracles in GPPs anyway, but you need extra miracles in this because these guys just don't touch the ball enough, right? Like, there's just a group of guys. Gurley, I'm gonna call that group. Gurley, Elliott, I guess Mixon, Barkley for sure, probably McCaffrey, and Melvin Gordon. That's the end of the list. That's the entire list of running backs that you can basically pencil in for 20 touches a game between rushing and receiving. And that list, that's just too short. And by the way, we're going to be in an even more difficult situation this week because there are four teams on a bye: Pittsburgh, Seattle, Oakland, Green Bay. Plus, you have another London game, but this one starts at 9:30 Eastern, so you're not going to have that one on the main slate. Plus, your typical Thursday and Monday slates games that aren't going to be on, including the Sunday night game. That's just that we're going to see the smallest player pool we've seen in terms of just main slate kind of stuff this week. And you're going to see, I think that's really going to shrink the overall ownership. And I think that's going to make it so that, like, Gurley stands out even more on the rest of this list. What other, any other performances stand out to you? Man, your boy Adam Thielen, Vikings, this guy, is he the safest wide receiver in the league at this point? You probably have to say he is, right? This is a game that didn't seem like it would be a game where they would even end up throwing a ton. And he still leads the league. It still leads the week in targets. Is he now just the safest receiver on the board? And it's kind of not close, or am I kind of overstating it, you think?
No, I've been taking a lot of flack for how much love I've been giving Thielen. I mean, he leads the league in targets, 81. Next closest is Brown at 72. They were tied not too long ago here, 58 receptions. And the difference I see there is the 70% plus catch rate. And I just don't get how he was so low owned last week, being the safest guy on the board. Like, I agree his price went up, but from what he's providing, at 13% in GPPs and like under 10% in cash games just seems absolutely crazy to me. Six straight 100-yard games. He's getting all the love out of the slot, all the targets. And some of the arguments are, well, Diggs is a better wide receiver, so he takes the top coverage. Well, that's kind of the same with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. I kind of bring those two combos together and compare them very close because it is very similar, where Brown and Diggs are getting the top coverage and Juju and Adam Thielen are getting, you know, the being able to take advantage out of the slot. And Thielen's just doing a phenomenal job. He's an elite route runner, and he just keeps producing. Like, Cousins just keeps throwing to him, and Cousins, some of those, like that touchdown he threw to him, that was just a beautiful throw. That was a good route, double move by Thielen to get into that place in the end zone in front of the field goal posts. But that throw, he just dropped it right in there. So Cousins and Thielen just seem to be just step and step each and every single week, first half, second half, throughout the entire game. And I agree, he's the safest wide receiver on the board, no matter how expensive. I think he's probably going to be the most expensive soon.
He should be at this point. And I think it's only because his price started at a lower point than the rest of this group that he hasn't gotten there. Like, the algorithms are having trouble even catching up with the opportunity. And, you know, because a lot of times these things come up incrementally based on ownership, based on your results and things like that. It's not just a person, obviously, each week typing in prices for these guys. It's algorithmically based, and it's only going to come up. It's probably capped at a certain percentage week over week, and he just still hasn't really even gotten there. I was in this bar, and I texted James, you know, the other guy from DFSR, said that I was only able to watch this Vikings game, and he kind of texted back, because I wasn't even able to look at ownership at this point. He's like, well, no one played Thielen, so you have your rooting interest. And I was like, really? No one played him. I couldn't believe it, because I ran out of here and was trying to get to these games as quick as possible, so I didn't even look at where ownership was. And the ownership was much more on guys like Mike Evans was a huge play, which I get kind of, because of the game script and sort of how the game is going to go, and yet the targets weren't even close on him for Thielen. And then obviously Julio Jones was the other chalk play. Jones ends up getting there, sort of, not barely he gets there, but another week of no touchdowns for Julio Jones. I mean, at what point will Julio Jones score a touchdown this year? It was kind of a joke for a little while, and now it's starting to seem like it's not so much of a joke. Sanu and Ridley are both banged up this week, but they're, you know, are we seeing a complete outlier thing here with Julio not catching touchdowns? Is it a real thing? It was really trending on Twitter yesterday with the frustration levels, and I can see why so many people played him. But is it a real thing with Julio at this point, or are we going to see a week where he just kind of puts up a monster one because it's still Julio Jones and this guy is still among the very top class of wide receivers in football?
Okay, I don't think it's an outlier whatsoever. I got looking into it. He hasn't scored a touchdown in six games this year. He hasn't scored a touchdown since week 12 last year. That's 11 straight games without a touchdown. And he only had three total touchdowns all of last year. So in his last 22 games, he's got three touchdowns and none in the last 11 games. So I got looking at the end zone targets inside the 20-yard line. He's only got three targets inside the 20-yard line this year.
That's insane.
That just is absolutely crazy to me.
It doesn't make any sense. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think he's a high floor play because he's getting there with the targets. So he's up there in targets. He's second in yardage to Thielen. So he's putting up the yards per game. So he's giving you a nice floor. And I do think that he is going to have one of these monster games where he's going to catch two touchdowns. He might have to do in Julio fashion where he catches like a 40, 50-yard bomb to get into the end zone because they're obviously not throwing to him inside the 20. But the upside is definitely going to be there. If people start getting sick of, you know, him not scoring, the ownership might creep down a little bit. He was still pretty chalky this week, even though the price. But I think one of those monster games is going to come where he's going to be in a winning lineup of GPP.
He gets the Giants this week. Their Giants defense is pretty bad. Their offense is pretty bad, too. So it's going to be interesting to see where they land. They do get another dome game for Julio. And like I said, if the other wide receivers and Sanu and Ridley end up not playing, like I said, they're both questionable. It's still early right now. We're recording this a week before, so much can change. But yeah, the Julio thing starting to look crazier and crazier on its face as it goes. Any other big performances stand out to you in terms of just, you're going to kind of pick a position. We kind of been all over the place here. We mentioned some of the running backs and mentioned some of the safety there, some of these bigger wide receivers. But any of these low owned guys that are starting to tick, you know, kind of perk your ears up on, what else stood out to you from week six?
Cameron Brait was one, just seeing how high owned he was with O.J. Howard coming back. I still kind of like Brait just because the way I looked at it, Winston likes throwing to him in the red zone. He was second in red zone targets last year to Mike Evans, and it was like 19-14, I believe. And then in 2016, it was like 19-19. They were tied for the most red zone targets on the team. So I could definitely see it, but I thought the ownership was going to go down when Howard was, green-lighted to get back in the game, but it wasn't. No, people didn't get off. I mean, I didn't really get off him either because I really liked the price, and I was so happy when he scored early, but after that, he was dead. There was nothing.
I was furious when I saw the ownership. Let me rephrase. I was ecstatic when I saw the ownership because I was like, oh my gosh, how was he still so high with O.J. Howard coming back? It was the first pivot we made personally in our projections when I saw Howard was coming back. I get the part of it where tight end is such a disaster at this point that you are just sometimes just forced into these guys because if there's going to be a $4,500 guy and you think he's going to see 35 to 40 snaps, which is not out of the realm of possibility with the Bucs, especially if they're going to run like double tight end sets because they have two good pass catchers, I get it. And it's really just speaks more to the position than it does about the thought process. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. O.J. Howard's back. And then he catches the first one for a touchdown. So I went on tilt about just like that ended up being the case. At this point with tight ends, I mean, who do you even put in the safe tight end group? Is there even a group of them? I mean, is it like Zach Ertz and that's it? Like, is it Zach Ertz and Kelsey? Like, I don't know. We complain about, I feel like I've been complaining about this every week with tight ends. This week didn't really do anything to change my mind. Ertz comes in with 9 targets, Kelsey 9 targets. Hooper does have another 10 target game. Is he creeping up there with you? This is multiple weeks of Austin Hooper double digit targets. And then Njoku, who we had as our kind of top play, had 12 targets. Is it like Ertz, Kelsey, and then a whole other group? Do you put Njoku into that group? Can Hooper go into that group? I don't know. It's crazy because I don't think there's like much more even maybe. There's very few other guys we can put there. But what do you make of these tight ends? Is there an elite class of tight end? And I guess I'm asking, how many guys deep do you think it goes?
I think it's a very limited group up top. I don't even know if we can fit Kelsey in there with how many weapons they seem to have. When they get Kareem Hunt going, you know, things really spread out. And if they're not going to score 40 points a game, it's not going to continue. I mean, they did against the Patriots. The Patriots defense sucks. You know, they're allowing a lot of points themselves. So you've seen what happened when they go up against a good defense the week before. I mean, I don't think Kelce fits in that class. I think Ertz is in that class. You got to kick Jordan Reed out. Like, he's just not doing really anything this year. Ebron
targets are there for Reed. But targets are there for Reed, true. But he can't catch anything.
No.
Like, this is multiple games where
so many drops.
Yes.
And Njoku's getting close, but it's pretty much, for me, it's like Ertz up there. If you're not paying up for Ertz, then you kind of got that second tier. Hooper, Njoku, you got, you know, Reed's more of a GPP play at this point. Kelce's a GPP play for me at this point. I mean, he's getting targets as well, but just, you know, the nature of having so many weapons on a team is not really what I'm looking for safety. Ebron kind of fits that mold. He'd be at the top of that next tier with Njoku and Hooper for me. And then it's punt. Every week I'm kind of looking for that punt guy. And one that's been standing out for me in Arizona there is Ricky Seals-Jones. He's, you know, his usage has been going up. He's catching the ball. He's 5 or 6 last week, 83% catch rate, 69 yards for his price. And that, I think he was like 32 to 3,500 on DraftKings, something like that. That's more than enough to hit value for him.
Because I was forced to watch that Cardinals game, I did see him make a couple of great catches, especially one down the field. So that was my one takeaway. One other thing, actually, I forgot to mention. I did come back to our place, and I ended up watching like the Mexican-Spanish Red Zone channel, which is just a pretty singular experience because they have one guy who just announces the games. It's not like John Hansen's Red Zone channel where they kind of cut in and out, and they kind of take you to the announcers of that game. In this one, there's just one guy, and they split screen him, so you get to watch him announcing. Imagine sitting like watching John Hansen just sit there on a split screen watching him announce the game I don't really understand Spanish that well, but just getting so excited about every single play. Like, every single play was just the single most exciting thing that these guys had ever seen in their life. So it ended up being way more enjoyable to watch the Red Zone in that fashion, I think, than just kind of skipping around. We're going to get out of here. Any final thoughts week 6 that's kind of stood out to you in terms of, you know, thinking about how you're going to attack DFS games going forward, or any other just kind of final thoughts?
Just kind of final thoughts for me is just pay up for those running backs every single week. I mean, you got the flex spot, so you're at least paying up for two running backs, and you can kind of find that third guy who's maybe in a good matchup, maybe going to see an uptick of targets in the passing game or something like that you could maybe fit in there. But for the most part, you need to pay up for two running backs and then, you know, find the value elsewhere. That's kind of the way – that's really the direction I'm going more and more as the season wears on.
I think I'm with you, and I think that's going to be a theme of the Cash Game podcast. That will be out this Thursday. That's going to be James and Chris rolling through Cash Games for Week 7. I'll be back with James on Friday doing a game-by-game breakdown for all the games coming up this weekend. And then, like I said, you're going to see that NBA podcast crop up on our feed over the next couple days as we cycle into basketball starting tomorrow evening and then really in earnest on Wednesday when most of the teams play. Tomorrow is the primetime sort of two-game slate. And then Wednesday's the game one, or the day when, if you're new to NBA, that's the big one where most of the teams are going to start to take over. Look for our content up on dfsr.com. dfsr.com/deals will get you that free 3-day trial, and then it was $24.95 a month for podcast listeners. Sign up now, you're going to have NBA for the first couple days, and I think you'll stick around with us in the long term. Chris, James will talk to you again on Thursday podcast. I'll talk to you as we talk offline all week. Enjoy the week, and good luck in Week 7.
Sounds good. Cheers, everybody.